KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
Clouds tonight, chance of showers, the low near 40. We're going to get a break in the rain tomorrow. Cloudy skies expected, the high near 50.
You know, when I see somebody who's got gratitude for the stuff in their life and they're walking around feeling gratitude, I am drawn to them.
When in doubt, throw in some sour cream. Often a winner in any baked good.
Yeah, you're right.
I was born and raised in one of the most beautiful places on earth. It was a time filled with wonder that I'll always remember. But when my family chose to move our zoo halfway around the world, that is when my greatest journey began.
That was Anne Lamott on Three Essential Prayers. Also later, we're going to talk about Thanksgiving pies, and we're going to talk about some of the new movies that are coming out for the fall, including The Life of Pi. But we start with the Joint Task Force on Education Funding today on Weekday on KUOW Seattle. The Washington State Committee met yesterday to hear proposals for funding of education. The task force is a bipartisan collection of members of the State House and Senate, as well as governor-appointed members of the education community. The task force is trying to find a reliable and dependable funding mechanism to sustain state schools. As you know, the courts have ruled again that the state is not meeting its paramount duty under the state constitution to amply fund education. Senator Dave Frock represents the 46th Legislative District. He is on the task force. Senator Frock, thanks for talking to us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Just broadly first, that is right, isn't it? You guys are charged with the very difficult task of coming up with some agreement on amply funding education.
Well, the task of the task force, so to speak, is to come up with recommendations to take to the legislature. So we're not obviously passing anything ourselves. This is going to be a framework that the legislature is going to have to implement in one respect or another coming into the session. So we're charged with coming up with recommendations to be acted on by the legislature and the governor.
But you have, I mean, essentially the task force has a while to come up with final ideas, right? A few years?
No, actually, we have to come up with a recommendation by December 31st of this year. So this is going to be something that's going to be basically laid on the desk of members of the legislature and the governor as we come into the session. So we've been meeting since late August, and we are kind of getting down to brass tacks right now in the next few sessions. We're going to be coming up with a variety of recommendations, I think.
When do they have to be in place, these funding mechanisms?
Well, the funding itself, under the court ruling, has to be, we have to show reliable and measurable progress towards full implementation of our basic education obligations by 2018. So, but we don't have to fund it all in 1 year. It's going to be over a period of basically 6 years, the next three biennia.
So you have to get going. I see.
The time is now, man. There's no other way around it.
Is there agreement on what amply funding education translates into in terms of dollars?
There is. We are working towards an agreement, I would say, on what is going to be in the box of additional money that is needed. That is a big part of what we have to do. And I think actually, Steve, that will be if we can get to a basic framework of what it actually means in terms of additional dollars over the next 6 years, that will be a big accomplishment if the task force can do that. I have a feeling there's going to be some disagreement on how we fund it. I think that's likely, and we're going to have to work hard on that. But the big question is, how do we get to the number and what is in the box? For example, the Supreme Court basically said to us, you need to fund, you passed a law that says all-day kindergarten is part of basic education. You need to amply fund it. You haven't been doing it. Same thing with some degree of class size reduction money in the early years. We have to allocate formulas, basically, that we push out to the districts and do them in a way so that the formulas show that the average class size is down at a lower level than we have currently for K-3. That is current law. So So that's what we're trying to get at. Those are just a couple of the examples. But the Supreme Court didn't tell us, they didn't say exactly how much it has to be. They just said you've got to fund it adequately, and you haven't been funding it.
You know that some people have said that amounts to an additional $1 billion a year in funding for state education.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think actually that might be a little bit low.
When both gubernatorial candidates ran, they said they could figure this out without new taxes. Now, this is a bipartisan committee in that there are partisans on all sides. And,
sure.
And so I'm asking you, as a Democrat from the 46th now in this case, what do you think of that argument? Can do it without any new revenues, new taxes?
We've looked at all the numbers. We've been looking at the numbers now for several months. I find it difficult to see how we can do this without some degree of new revenues. To do this merely within the growth of the budget and other things, when you look at other caseloads that are going up, for example, or you look at things that we haven't been funding over the last several years and have cut dramatically, and I think most specifically of higher education. We fund a lot of things. As bad as the budget situation has been the last several years, we have cut a whole lot out of higher education and shifted costs onto families and students, doubling tuition in some respects at many of our institutions. There's a strong feeling that, in my opinion, we can't do that anymore. And we looked at some numbers that were provided to us by our staff just at our meeting a couple of weeks ago, right after the election. And if you went basically with a zero revenue type budget and just funded everything at baseline levels, you're looking at least an additional 10 to 15% reduction in higher ed spending to fund other parts of the budget, which would include K-12. And it could probably be actually more than that for a variety of technical reasons, which I won't go into. So in my mind, I think it's going to be difficult to do it without some degree of new revenue. That said, we have a new governor, and it's very important for us to hear what his ideas are. And I'm going to listen absolutely closely to his and all ideas from, you know, we have a closely divided Senate. So we're going to have to work closely with Republicans. It's going to have to be, you know, I think we're going to have to get everybody, you know, both parties on board and moving in the same direction. So I'm open to all ideas, and so we'll have to see.
Senator David Frocht represents the 46th Legislative District in the Washington State Legislature. He is a member of the Joint Task Force on Education Funding in Washington State. Now, you met Tuesday to talk about a number of issues, including some proposals for funding mechanisms. So what kind of things did you hear that were intriguing, even if they were, you know, out of the box?
Well, I think that there's a couple things that are going on. And number one, if you look at the additional revenue that's going to be required, and you said $1 billion, I think that might be a little bit low, as I mentioned. I don't think it'll be more than $2 billion in the first biennium. I think it would be actually significantly less than that. But we come in with a $900 million hole already. So really, the problem we have to solve is really on the order of $2 billion, because that's just if we're to solve the existing problem.
In the whole state budget.
Yeah, right. If you combine the additional spending we need to do on education and the current shortfall that's projected, which is about $900 million based on the most recent revenue forecast. So I think a couple of things are pretty obvious to me is we've got a sunset on a B&O surcharge that has been in place for some time. That is likely, in my opinion, I don't know how you could get to at least servicing the initial problem without, even if you do other cuts, without probably leaving that in place to some degree. That's one issue. That's about $500 million over biennium. That's one thing that I think is probably likely to be in the mix.
I would imagine if some of your Republican colleagues say this is exactly what the legislature does. It puts a tax on, and then it promises to get rid of it, and then it doesn't.
There's no question that we're going to hear that kind of rhetoric. And my question is, okay, you show me the cuts, because I've talked to people, and I keep saying, okay, where you show me where. You show me where we're going to actually, what do you want to actually cut? What in higher education? What in corrections? Other things. I mean, we had a discussion today with our the budget lead in the House, who many of your listeners know is Ross Hunter, and he has gone through the budget from his perspective, and he knows more about it than probably anybody in the state. And he's like, you know, I can't get there without just having this thing look just macabre in what we end up doing on a whole range of things. So everybody's going to have to kind of put their money where their mouth is when we get down to this thing. And I am more than willing to entertain all options, but we need to kind of get past the rhetoric and get real and talk about, solutions that are going to have to be probably some combination of adjustments, budget reductions, and probably some combination of revenues, in my opinion.
Well, in terms of their funding task force, how close are you to having any recommendation?
We're working on it, Steve. We're not there yet. We're working on it. We've got another month or so. And we're not there yet, though.
You know, sometimes you mentioned the funding pre-K is one of the things that they should be doing, or full kindergarten, rather, is one of the things that the state should be doing. There has been a lot of talk about the necessity to really fund 0 to 3 for education, and that would be a place to have a lot of bang for your buck in terms of what we know now about learning and young people. Is there support for an idea like that in this task force, even if it means money shifting away from programs for older students?
Let me answer that question. It's a great question, and it is actually something that's come up quite a bit. And the answer, I think, is there could be support. If not in the task force, I think there is likely to be some support for that in the legislature coming in. And I'll give an example. If you look at the funding, the allocation level to get down to 17 person average class size for K-3, if you took that up to 18 or even 19, that's the target, okay? Could you shift some of that money into early learning that and then really have a great bang for your buck, as you pointed out, I think accurately, based on all the evidence? That might be something, an adjustment that we could do to tweak the basic education formula without basically completely, gutting the reform that was put in place, 4 or 5 years ago, because this was, in fact, designed to be the education funding reform bill that we have not been able to fully process, that we haven't been able to fully implement. So I think my answer to your question in sort of a long way is, yes, that's something I'm actually very interested in, and I think there's going to be some support for that on perhaps with some of my friends on the Republican side.
State Senator David Frocht, who represents the 46th Legislative District, is part of the Joint Task Force on Education Funding in the Washington State Legislature, also gubernatorial appointees on that as well, including Mary Lindquist of the WEA and Susan Enfield, who is Highline School District Superintendent. Have a happy Thanksgiving, sir. I appreciate you talking to us.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for your interest.
Good morning. It's 9:18. I'm Andy Hurst. Coming up next, a conversation with best-selling author Anne Lamott. Her latest book is called Help, Thanks, Wow, The Three Essential Prayers. She joins us next.
Support for KUOW comes from the Seattle Symphony, presenting the Wyckoff Masterworks Concert. Morlot conducts Mahler's Symphony No. 4 on November 29th and December 1st at Benaroya Hall. Tickets online at seattlesymphony.org.
Clouds and showers, 47 degrees right now in the U District. Forecast calls for clouds and rain the rest of today. Fairly breezy as well. Today's high in the upper 40s. It's going to be cloudy tonight. Chance of showers, the low near 40. We're going to get a break from the rain tomorrow. Cloudy skies expected and a little bit warmer, the high reaching 50.
This is Weekday. I'm Steve Scher. Help, thanks, wow. The three essential prayers from Anne Lamott. Anne Lamott is a best-selling author of Some Assembly Required, Grace, Plan B, and many more. She joins us to talk about this new book. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Steve.
What's help?
Help is the big prayer. Help is the I'm at the end of my rope and I don't have any more good ideas left and it's all hopeless. And yet, you know, help is the prayer of literature and movies. It's being hunched over in a corner whispering, God help me, because you're so doomed, because it's so hopeless. And it's the hardest place to get to because it means you finally accept that you are not going to think your way out of this.
And that's the revelation?
It's not a revelation so much as it's just
a resignation. Full
yeah, it's surrender. It's putting down your weapons and saying, I'm done. I'm done. I don't have a clue. It's sort of saying bitterly to God, what? Okay, fine, what?
But it's not just saying bitterly to God that. It's saying it's what? You're asking of yourself and others. That's you're giving of yourself and to others that surrender, right?
You're surrendering. You're giving up. You've been carrying around this big boulder, and you carry it with you everywhere as you try to figure it out. It's the problem, the boulder of your family, of your own spiritual or moral composition, or of your own problems, and you carry it around, carry it. You get up. It's on the bed with you in the morning. You take it in. You have coffee with your boulder. You put it in your back seat. You strap it in because it's your boulder. And finally, you say, "I'm done. I can't keep carrying this boulder around." And you put it down and you say, what? Okay, I'm done. Take the boulder. Have the boulder.
Why is that helping me?
Because it's giving you a huge amount of an advantage not having to carry around a 100-pound problem anymore. It's freeing up both of your hands to receive something that might be on its way. It's giving you a shot at something bigger than your own tortured mental condition.
Why am I doing that otherwise, though, as a human? Aren't I trying to solve, to cope, to deal?
Well, I think that's another thing we were raised thinking is that we're here, that I was raised by atheists, and I was raised to believe in forward thrust, and I was raised to believe that you always just keep moving forward and dominating more and more and achieving more and more, and you'd stay one step ahead of the abyss no matter what, because existentially the abyss is always at our feet, and in all the great spiritual writing, the abyss opens up at people's feet and they fall in, and all the stuff they've achieved and succeeded and all the people they've dominated and collected and gathered, none of it matters anymore. It's just you and life. It's you and life. And you finally stop and you stop the train of self-will and of self-promotion and you take a long, deep breath and you say, help.
And thanks?
Thanks is just the miracle that every so often we stop and we notice how incredibly grateful we might be, could be, deserve to be for so many things breaking our way, so many things happening for our families that might not have happened. It's for all the times, big times, diagnoses and whatnot, where the coin lands on the right side for your family. Your family got a break, other families didn't get it. And you say, thank you. That's for me what it is. It's that, you know, when I see somebody who's got gratitude for the stuff in their life and they're walking around feeling gratitude, I am drawn to them. I am just so drawn. And half the time I'm so grateful and half the time I'm too busy kind of getting more to notice that I have everything on earth I ever dreamt of having.
Did you write about your friends, one of whom has Lou Gehrig's disease?
Yeah.
A disease you try to avoid.
I told her this is like the one thing you should try not to get while you're here.
What's her thanks?
The gratitude is the quality of the love coming into her life and her wife's life and the steadiness and steadfastness and loyalty of her very best friends and the extraordinary beauty of nature. I say she talks through this iPad now with a voice, I can't remember what it's called, but it's called Kate.
And
she types it and it says what it is. And I said, what are you so grateful for? Because you can tell she's grateful. She said, I'm grateful for my friends and the beauty of the earth. And I saw her a couple days ago. She's the happiest person I was going to see that day. Because really? She had to put down the boulder. She's not going to do a lot of the stuff that she thought defined her, that she thought her life was about, that her childhood was about, that her college was about, the greatness of one woman's life. And all of a sudden, it's not going to get her anywhere. She doesn't have her hands anymore. She has a tube in her stomach to breathe, to feed her. And yet, she was the happiest person I was going to see that day.
She could just as easily be bitter about getting that horrible disease.
And she could have decided not to go ahead with the various surgical procedures that give her life here in a very, very compromised condition. But she is in love with life. She was loved having me there the other day. She went to one of the World Series games, you know, when the Giants won a few weeks ago. She was ecstatic. And everybody else here racing around, kind of semi-annoyed by how hard it was to get parking. Not Barbara. Barbara just was shining like a little lighthouse.
And wow?
Wow is where you get to when you've run out of very many words to describe how really stunning it all is and how both the world, like you don't go outside and under a starry night and go, ho-hum, boy, I've been there, seen that. You walk under the knees of stars and you go, wow, this is a trip. And also with your family, stuff happens that really can't resolve. Or the people you love most, who maybe are friends and not blood relatives, stuff cannot have resolved and did. Someone got a break. Someone got the healing. And you say, wow, because you know what it was like before that.
Anne Lamott's new book is Help, Thanks, Wow, The Three Essential Prayers. Now, you gave me a little prayer 101 at the beginning here.
Mm-hmm.
Why pray?
Well, I pray, I think it's about being a certain kind of person who felt it in a certain cellular level at either an early age or maybe not so early. I felt it at an early age that somebody was listening. It's like a lot of people don't read all the time. I read all the time. I would say my life is about reading. You know, it's my favorite time of day is to get back in bed and have a book for an hour and to read. And people say, well, why don't you know, there's so much going on in life. I just want to read. And I was saved in a salvation kind of way at about six by chapter books. Because I could get lost in them. And in getting lost in them, I could get found. Pippi Longstocking's Little Women, A Wrinkle in Time, Robert Louis Stevenson, who was very big in the 50s. And I knew at 6 years old also that I had girlfriends who prayed, and I believed that when they prayed, someone was listening. And we weren't encouraged or supposed to pray, and I prayed. I said, hi, hi, and I felt that someone heard me.
Now, you talk about this, someone listening.
Someone listening.
Someone, conceptualize someone for me. Because you have many different ways of conceptualizing the someone.
Well, someone or something or some wider frequency than just you and me sitting here talking over two mics. And this looks like the entire world to me right now because I'm in Seattle and this is so, I'm so focused on this and it's so important for me to do and all of that. But my spiritual understanding has taught me that that a lot of the stuff that's going on that's most interesting is not visible and that I have very, very limited perceptual fields and that I have come to believe over the last, 4 years that there are concentric circles out where more and more interesting stuff is happening. Like not echo chambers exactly, but when you're in a pristine part of nature, when you're in the mountains, when you're by the stream, you start to hear stuff that is extraordinary. It's outside of the ordinary. It's the way that it's the voice of the creek. It's the voice of the stream. It's four or five different voices in a very small creek. It's the echo. It's the future echo. It's the echo that you already heard that is still reverberating. There's just so, to me, more going on than I can capture either in words or that can be scientifically explained. I'm not trying to convince anyone of this, believe me. I don't have a single person I'm trying to suck into my web.
What drew you to write the book?
Well, it wasn't even To share the book. My publisher, who is not a religious man at Riverhead, came and heard. Sam and I had a book out. I think I was here for it. Some assembly required in Sam and I were on tour, and we were in New York City doing a reading, and somebody asked about something about having to do with God or prayer or something, and I just started talking about, I don't have interesting theological ideas on things. I understand almost nothing. I'm a dropout, and yet I believe in keeping things simple, and I believe in these three prayers that will cover all situations and will stop the trance of your busyness or your multitasking or your obsessing about what happened this morning at breakfast or what it's going to be like when you get home. And my publisher heard it, and he was taken by it. And he said, if you could do this very quickly, we'd love 15,000 words on what you're talking about. So, because I talk about it very easily. Help, you know, help me, help me, help me. And thank you. Oh, my God, thank you. Oh, my God, that was such a close call. And then stepping outside or picking up the phone and getting and going, wow. So I did it. I did it in 4 months. You know, I finished it in late August, and I'm not sure of the date, but it's not that much later than that.
Now, I've read a few of your books, though not all of them, but it seems that Jesus is here more than in some of your other books.
I don't think it's that Jesus-y. I think actually there's other more Jesus-y books. I think Traveling Mercies is more Jesus-y, and Plan B, which I wrote during the Bush administration, was pretty Jesus-y. But I don't think this one's heavily Jesus-y. It's more sort of higher power.
I remember Plan B. I don't know. I guess maybe it's that prayer itself is so much more intimate.
Prayer's very intimate. But, you know, there's a beautiful Jesus-y prayer by Thomas Merton that everybody can Google. If you Google Thomas Merton prayer, it comes up to this. And it's a perfect prayer. It says, and just to paraphrase, it says, I really don't have a clue what the future holds. I don't have a clue how I'm going to pull any of this off, but I'm just trusting that my desire to please you does please you, and you won't leave me alone. And it's such a perfectly engineered and constructed prayer. I wanted to reprint it, but they wouldn't. The publisher of the prayer wanted a god-awful amount of money for it, and so I just wrote my own, which says, I forgot exactly how it goes, but it says, like, we're all doomed and it's all hopeless, and what else is new, and I'm enraged, and however
I am saying,
however, I understand. I
help,
am not
thanks and wow, or however
I am. I'm surrendering. I understand that I only think I'm in charge of a great deal, and I have the sort of personality that children who grow up in crazy homes have, where I like to manage and I love to manage people's lives. Like, I automatically want to help. I want to save and rescue. I want to be the glue that holds my family together. And I realize I'm not in charge of almost anything. And that's the moment of surrender, of just giving up, of saying to something that may be listening, do you have any ideas? I'm done.
You also talk about how these three prayers lead you to service, which leads you back again to these three prayers and to love.
Yeah. Service leads to joy. It's funny because people like me, who have been very, very high achievers, were raised to believe that you're supposed to have, like, people be of service. That's how you can tell you've arrived, is that there's lots of people to help you. But
your butlers?
Well, maybe not butlers, but certainly personal assistants, or, you know, people that come and clean and take care of the dogs and give the cat a flea bath and stuff so that you don't have flea dip. But it turns out spiritually, in every great wisdom tradition, people finally say, if you want to be very, very very, very happy, take care of everyone, get the thirsty water, give away as much as you can, share with the poor, the basic democratic plank, and that we're all in it together, where I am my brother's keeper, I am my sister's keeper, and that's where I'm going to be happy, is in the truth of that spiritual identity. So service does lead to joy. Like, if you want to have an incredibly joyful day, all you have to do is go flirt with every single old person you see today, like at the health food store, at the gas station, talk about their hat and mention your grandfather's hat, and put a little energy out there, and it makes you happy. So that brings you back to the, wow, thanks. I was completely obsessed about, you know, how the publication's going to go, how I'm going to sleep tonight in a hotel 600 miles, this, how my kid's doing, what this, I wonder if the dog, if he'll remember the dog's medicine. And all of a sudden I get into what I would call a state of grace, because I'm stopping to be sweet and loving with this old guy at the gas station, and that's making me feel sweet and loving.
I like this C.S. Lewis quote that you had. I pray because I can't help myself. I pray because I'm helpless. I pray because the need flows out of me all the time, waking and sleeping. It doesn't change God. It changes me.
Yeah, it's a great line.
What's God doing in all this?
What is God doing in all of this? Well, my belief is that God is what we're all made of, in a sort of Albert Einstein sort of way, that there's one thing, and that mass equals energy, and that some energy is moving very, very quickly, like, say, me and my mind is racing right now, but that the wood floor is made of that exact same thing. There's only one thing it's all made of. And so to me, I'm made of this. You know, someone had a great line. They said, Jesus had every single thing that we have, but he didn't have all the extra stuff too. So my understanding of God is that we're all made of this stuff, the same stuff of the universe that the stars are made of, but that, you know, God doesn't have all this extra stuff also. Like, God isn't worrying about God's butt as much as I am. So, but I just think there's one thing, and I would say the easy way to communicate is that it's all love, or it's all this sweet, intelligent energy that animates the universe that I happen to believe in. It's like, I wouldn't try to get you to believe that. I don't actually care if you believe that. It's how I have experienced the world.
God doesn't need you worrying about his butt.
I don't ever worry about God's butt.
Do I? You know, this is a funny thing that, so I was watching Mike Huckabee talk about his new book.
Ah.
And he was talking about the tests of faith.
Fire, yeah, the test of fire.
He would say that God does care about these choices that I make.
I think God cares about the choices I make in a way that I don't. There happens to be 0% overlap between me and Mike Huckabee, and I wrote at least 20 Twitters on Mike Huckabee and the test of fire, and whether or not we'd be given the questions first. Which, if we're not given the questions first, it's not really even fair, if you ask me. But what I believe is probably a lot more of what you believe than Mike Huckabee. I believe that the central terrifying issue of the world is fundamentalism, and Mike Huckabee is a fundamentalist. But I wouldn't. He would be able to explain things in a much more doctrinal, Bible-based way than I would ever be interested in explaining. So I do think God is like a parent. I do experience God as a sort of, like the Christian Science would say, a mother-father God, or a loving parent, that I'm made of the same stuff, but I've got issues, you know? Obviously, I've got issues.
Well, doesn't God?
No.
He doesn't have issues? She doesn't have issues? No. It doesn't have issues?
No. God is just love. God just is. God gives. God just is. God is the great isness.
All right. Well, then you end, you say, as you remind us, we end these prayers by saying amen, or mm-hmm. amen. Mm-hmm. The word means truly, or, and so it is.
Mm-hmm.
So as you ask, what's it and what's is?
You know, I have a friend who's 15, a boy with a terrible kind of brain tumor, a brain cancer, and he says, you know, it is what it is. I've got this, and I can play it however I want to. And I can either be having this fantastic life and hope for the best and go work out, or I can lose my mind, you know, and I can, and he says, it is what it is. And I don't say to him, well, what do you mean by it? You know, it's like his reality, his life, his destiny. His destiny is not the one he or any of us had hoped it was. Our hope was that he would live a very, very long life and have a bunch of children. I don't think that's likely. But it is, his life is as it is being revealed right now. He is an incredibly hilarious and happy person. And I have a friend who is frozen. I've known her for 30 years. She's sober also. She's frozen in a wheelchair, and she has these people that come by that are so outrageous. And we all cut up little chocolates for her. And when I see her, I'm not put to shame, because I'm really, really try to not go there, but I'm humbled, because Barbie is so positive. Her name is Barbie. She loves her cat. She loves her chocolate. She loves us. She loves God. And I said, Barbie, what do you do all day? What do you actually do all day? She says, well, I sit here, I watch some TV, just think about God and just look outside and just really see God being expressed in the glory of nature in a sort of Gerard Manley Hopkins way. And I think, boy, I don't have that kind of personality. Like, I'm so much more about like MSNBC and, you know, the treadmill but she's going to be the happiest person I see that day by a long shot, because she doesn't have a lot of choice to. Well, and it is what it is.
I'm going to come back to that. But
okay.
So these are tools for you, or these are life rafts for you? Help, thanks.
They're not life rafts so much as they're, it's sort of like I'm a really good tennis player, especially used to be when I was young. And I know how to play tennis. My body knows how to play tennis. I know how to hit a backhand. I don't have to think about stepping at a certain time, keeping my eye on the ball. It's internalized. This is my internalized response to the fact that our families are very, very damaged, that I thought that this country was going to be ruled by the craziest, most offensively rich people that have ever existed. I thought terrifying things, and all I could do was to surrender and then do the footwork. And I automatically do that. I surrender. I say, I'm not in charge. It might have been today that it is what it was, and that, you know, John Bolton was going to be the head of the Secretary of State or something.
And if that had happened?
And if that had happened, I would have prayed. I need a lot. I prayed for 8 solid years of Bush Cheney, that I'd be able to have a really rich life in spite of it all, and that I'd be helpful, that I help people keep their sense of self and their senses of humor. You know, and I have said, and I believe, that laughter really is carbonated holiness. To me, it's a spiritual element. It's an element, laughter is. And so for me, these are sort of like elements. They're not quite tools. They're the way I play tennis. They're what I turn to. They're what I've internalized, because I know at the age of 58, I am not in charge of much. I have never successfully saved or rescued one single person. I just have the illusion that I have.
But you wouldn't put us to a test of fire over.
I wouldn't. But if there were a test of fire and I had to take it without being given the questions first, I would want to file a brief with the Fairness Commission.
Is this a Thanksgiving book? Help, thanks, wow, the 3 essential prayers? What do you think about Thanksgiving? Not as a gorgeous holiday.
I just don't approve of the holidays in general.
What's wrong?
I don't like any of the holidays, starting with, I don't like
that
holidays.
That sounds Grinch-like.
No, I know. I mean, you would never know it because my behavior is perfect. I'm like such a good girl and I'll do all the right things.
Wait, what don't you approve about the holidays?
I think they're just all so false and inauthentic. And everybody, especially the women, are asked to go crazy and talk about carrying a boulder around, trying to remember 200 details to feed everybody. I'll be feeding 15
people. Well, now you're just
people.
Making it a bummer. I was just thinking about the thankfulness of it, that we have prayers in our heads and our hearts.
You asked why I don't like the holidays, and it's because women get burdened with this tremendous amount of details and expense and stuff, and then it'll end up being really beautiful, and we'll say grace, and I'll sit with 15 people who I would do anything in the world for, and we will have absolutely unbelievably great food, and I will be really, really happy. But you did ask why I don't like the holidays. I don't actually even approve of December. If I were God, or if I were God's West Coast assistant, I would have skipped December. I would have said, we will do Thanksgiving, and we're going to go immediately to January 1st.
Right, well, at least when all those people sit there and have a moment's silence and say grace, do you go, wow?
I do. I say, wow, because we've had fights. We've been a real family. Some of us have almost died of alcoholism, drug addiction. We're all there. Some people in the family are sick, and we're all there, and we all are completely full of love for each other.
Anne Lamont's latest book is Help, Thanks, Wow, the 3 Essential Prayers. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Weekday.
Always going on and on about creativity. In fact, we don't know what we're talking about.
When you start to study it and start to try to figure out what it is and specify its constituents, it becomes more and more and more confusing. Nobody agrees on what it is.
The truth about creativity. That's next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
And that comes your way Sunday night at 7 o'clock.
Support for KUOW comes from Half Price Books, celebrating Black Friday, November 23rd at all locations. More information on new and used books, music, movies, and more at hpb.com.
Clouds and rain, 46 degrees right now in Seattle. We're expecting the high today in the upper 40s. Forecast calls for clouds and showers, and it's going to be fairly breezy as well. Cloudy tonight, chance of showers, the low near 40. We're going to get a break in the rain tomorrow. Cloudy skies are expected, however, the high reaching 50.
Support for KUOW comes from Emirates, offering daily nonstop service from Seattle to Dubai and on to more than 120 destinations worldwide. More at emirates.com/USA. Fly Emirates. Hello tomorrow.
This is Weekday. I'm Steve Scher. What is a Thanksgiving meal without the pie? Really, pie is just the excuse. The reason we have Thanksgiving. Turkey's the excuse. Wendy Sykes is owner of 420 Blackbirds. She helps people bake, especially pies. Other things, too.
Cookies as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pies are, yeah.
Yeah.
And Danny Cohn is owner of High Five Pie, as well as Fuel Coffee. High Five Pie on Capitol Hill. Fuel Coffee all around the city. Good to see you.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And good to see you.
You too.
Do you have a favorite pie for Thanksgiving?
Yeah. We have something that we've been making in my family for a long time. I think it actually did come from someone named Joanne. It's called Joanne's Pumpkin Pie. But I don't really know. I think it might have been one of my mom's friends when we were living in Wrangell, Alaska. And it's not like the sort of standard slab o' pumpkin. It's a pumpkin chiffon, and then it has a layer of whipped cream as well. So it's really light. It's really nice. Yeah,
wow.
It's really, really good
All
stuff.
Right. We'll get to that in a minute, a little more in depth. Do you have a favorite pie for Thanksgiving?
Ooh, well, I love sweet potato pie because I love the toasted marshmallows on top. And this year we started making something new, a salted caramel pear pie that I'm crazy about right now.
Well, that sounds really good.
It's so good. Yeah.
Salted pear caramel.
That's right.
When does the salt come into the baking?
It's in the mix. And then it's also sprinkled coarsely on top, too.
At the very end.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What do you make at home? Like, what will you make Thursday? Or will you?
No. I mean, this week, you probably didn't notice, but I walked into the studio with pumpkin pie mix all over my pants and everything.
So you're cranking it out.
I'm cranking it out. Hundreds and hundreds of pies in the next 3 to 4 days. So by the time we're closed, we're open on Thanksgiving till noon. And after that, I will not be making any more pie.
I see.
For anybody.
For 24 hours.
You're open so people can come and get the
right.
pies you've been cranking out.
Yep.
Nice of you.
I'm kind of a philanthropist. we're open, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and cranking them out.
I see. All right. And then let me start with those two savory dishes, because mm-hmm. pies are about dessert, but pies are changing, right? And savory pies are important.
Sure.
Pies aren't changing. Our tastes are changing. So what are those two things that are sitting on our table? And you should describe them since this is radio. What are those two savory
sure. well,
devices?
Well, I've got a couple examples of things you can do for savory pies, especially around Thanksgiving as you're entertaining and you might want some appetizers or some individual serving things too. So I brought a broccoli mushroom cheddar flip side, which are our handheld turnovers. And that's a pretty simple mix, really. Broccoli, mushroom, cheddar, a couple spices, and all wrapped up and baked in a hand pie, a pocket pie.
A pie dough. Same
yeah,
dough as you'd use
dough.
For
exactly. Yeah, it's
still
all butter crust. It's great for sweet or savory. And the other thing that I brought is a ham and Gruyere and caramelized onion galette. And these are really also pretty easy to make and delicious and great to go along with any meal.
What is a galette?
So if you roll out your pie dough and you cut out a circle maybe about 6 inches in diameter, and then you put the filling in the middle and just fold the edges of the circle up around it. And you can make it pretty. You can just make it rustic and fold them on over. It's like an open-faced
It's sort of like a tart.
Pie. Like
yeah.
a tart, like, but a little bit more rustic.
Yeah, a rustic quiche. Quiche tart sort of thing.
But yeah. no egg.
But no egg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But the shape, it's sort of like
it's
open,
like an open-faced pie, right?
Yeah.
When or are you suggesting those savory would be good at the beginning of the meal as an appetizer, as a first course, as something like that?
I think it'd be great or also entertaining, for a little appetizer with drinks, before the meal or as a side dish, you know, alongside other things. You can make, I mean, you could use any sort of filling in there. You could make sweet ones, of course, as well, and have a pile of those ready for on the dessert table. And,
oh, I like that image.
Yeah.
Pile of galettes.
A pile of galettes.
Well, they're easy to eat as well. Like if mm-hmm. you were having more of a cocktail feel to something, those little hand pies are good because they don't have that. You can serve them at any temperature. They don't have to be right. steaming hot, and so you can set them out, and then people can eat them. They're a little bit like finger food.
Have you made them with like pumpkin or apple or anything?
Yes? Yeah, I mean they're essentially a turnover.
Yeah.
So you can make whatever filling you want. I have a little hand pie recipe that has roasted winter vegetables and squash, and that's really, really yummy.
That sounds mm-hmm. very good.
Yeah, and make that into a hand pie.
Does any difference in the crust when you're making something that's going to be handheld?
When I make my crust for a sweet pie, I add a little bit of sugar, and then if I'm going to use I use the same crust essentially minus the sugar for something savory.
You too?
No, ours is just butter. It's the same crust for both sweet and savory.
Okay.
Pretty well.
Okay. Wendy Sykes is here. Danny Cohn is here. We're talking pies. Joanne's pumpkin pie, which it's thicker?
Yeah. So what it is, when you cook the pumpkin filling on the stovetop, you have a pre-baked shell, pie shell, and then you cook the pumpkin filling on the stovetop, and then you fold in egg whites that you've beaten, and so it makes it a really nice and fluffy. And then you also have whipped cream that's been whipped. And so there's a layer of whipped cream and then a layer of the pumpkin chiffon and then some more whipped cream on top and then toasted pecans on top. It's so good. So good.
And it's done.
And then it's done. Yeah, it's something you can also make the day ahead, which is really nice. You can make it Wednesday and it's perfect for Thursday.
Is there any trick to folding in egg whites into something like that?
You have to make sure not to overwork them so that the egg whites don't break down, but you also don't want big globs of egg white. It's just watching. You don't want to beat them. You really do want to gently fold them. You know, take your spatula, go all the way down to the bottom of the bowl and gently fold up and then turn your bowl a little bit. So it's a little bit of a, mm-hmm. a gentle process.
I've noticed a lot about baking is so much about the look, the feel, the texture, the smell of it, all of that, you know, it's as opposed to precise technique. You just have to go with it and see.
Yeah, and temperature of the room right. and humidity, all those things sort of factor in. You want to be aware, but again, you don't want to be afraid.
Right.
It's the craft. You learn the craft and then it's your art.
Mm-hmm.
You note, I usually double by half the whipping cream mixture to be certain there'll be enough to cover the top of the pie.
I do because, you know, most people like whipped cream. And in my family, we really do like whipped mm-hmm. cream. This is the one that I'm bringing three pies to Thanksgiving. I'm bringing this one, which my sister texted me to double check. You're bringing that because I was panicking that nobody was bringing the pumpkin pie. I'm like, yes, I'm bringing that. And then an apple with salted caramel.
Oh,
so,
great.
I'm bringing that style as well. And then a chocolate pecan because my husband really likes chocolate.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, with the chocolate pecan, how do you make the chocolate pecan real quick? What do you do?
You know, it's pretty simple. And it's just like a pecan pie, which has, you know, the caro syrup. But then you also have chocolate melted. And so
so it's still got the consistency of the pecan pie, but
yeah,
it's got the chocolate.
Yeah,
in it.
But it has chocolate in it.
I see.
Yeah, and it has this one calls for a crust on top as well, a lattice crust. So it's more of a tart because it's very rich.
Oh, I see.
But it's good stuff.
Good. We have something similar with caramel pecan, and it's probably
yeah.
a lot like that.
You could
yeah.
toss some sea salt on the top of that sucker too.
Would be good.
Yeah,
I like this.
So is the caramel pecan also hard? Harder like the pecan pie or the chocolate pie, or is it a little more runny?
It's a little more runny.
Gooey.
Yeah.
Gooey.
Yeah.
Gooey's good.
Yeah, gooey. You want to shoot for gooey, I
yeah,
think.
Gooey.
You don't want it overbaked because
you
it's
shoot
dry
for gooey
it's
with
fun.
Your Yeah, you don't want it to dry out.
Yeah, gooey. You don't want it to dry out. My problem is I won't be cooking at my home. I'll be cooking at my sister's home, and she has convection ovens, and I don't have convection ovens at home. So I'm going to do a little research and make sure that I'm doing my timing appropriately because they cook differently.
Yeah, how do they cook? Can you explain it? How they cook differently?
Do you?
Yeah. And it's great. I mean, it just circulates the air so much more, so you get a more even bake.
And it cuts down on the time, yeah?
It does.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I would lessen the time. I mean, be conservative about it, but I would lessen the time by 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
To start
by
with.
5 to 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, which is significant.
Maybe
in a...
Start with, yeah, it is. So start with 10 minutes less when you're baking your pie, and then just keep checking.
Yeah. And what I found in previous Thanksgivings at this house that it doesn't burn if you go long, it just dries it out. Do you know? So you
They're pretty
so
hardy.
they still look like what it's supposed to look like, but then you're a little disappointed when it comes out.
The inside isn't as juicy. Yeah.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure that I back off my cooking times.
Oh,
well,
that's good to remember. What's the theory behind the convection oven? What
the circulating air?
It's circulating the air.
Yeah.
And so the heat theoretically otherwise gathers at the top of in an oven.
Right. So it's
well,
a more
not theoretically,
bake.
It does.
Yeah. Well, and
it's a well-known theory.
Yeah.
But it's tricky when you're cooking at someone else's home as well. I think that's part of the stress sometimes of the holidays. So it's always good to do as much as you can ahead of time. I mean, even measuring. I measure ahead of time and put my ingredients in.
Do you really?
Yeah, in a little baggie, just so that I'm, because you're talking and perhaps drinking. And if you're in my family, absolutely drinking. And so you don't want to have to think so much. And somebody else might be using the measuring cups at the same time. So I just try to do as much as I can at my house and then take it with me and have it ready to go.
All right, Danny Cohn, what about that? What about that sweet potato pie? What should we know about it?
It's delicious. It's great. We have a great recipe for sweet potato pie in our cookbook, Cutie Pies, and it's great.
Do you do
I
something?
Love sweet potato
do you
pie.
Do something special with the sweet potatoes? How do you get them to have pie flavor, pie filling consistency?
Well, you roast the sweet potatoes. And then you whip them and add spices and butter and all sorts of good things like that. But, you know, it's really a relatively simple pie to make.
Really?
I wouldn't be intimidated by this pie, no.
Because I have been.
Oh, really?
Intimidated by the sweet potato pie.
No.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I think it's the recipe. I think sometimes they're not as flavorful, you know, depending on what the recipe is. I've made them before, and you can have really basic ones, and then you have others that have a little bit more zing. I love the idea of the marshmallows on top, though, because then you get a little of that extra flavor.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Do you think yours has the zing from the allspice? I see you have allspice in here. I know.
There is there's a couple of spices in there. That definitely helps. And you've got to really, like with anything, whenever you're making pies, you've got to make sure you're using good quality produce and that it's ripe and that it's ready to go and...
Good spices that haven't been sitting around for over
a
year.
And throw in some more butter. If in doubt, throw in more butter.
Totally. Or, you know what I have found? When in doubt, throw in some sour cream. Often a winner in any baked good.
Yeah, you're right.
It adds a little fat and a little tang and some flavor.
Wow, I was going to ask you guys for some last-minute tips, but I think you gave them to us. That's very good.
Measure ahead and throw in some sour cream.
Yeah, exactly. When in doubt, more butter and sour cream.
Yeah.
And another drink. I would say happy Thanksgiving on that note. Wendy Sykes is owner of 4 and 20 Blackbirds Baking School. And and Joanne's pumpkin pie. Are you sharing that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there should be the recipe and maybe even a picture.
All right, great. And Danny Cohn, owner of High Five Pie on Capitol Hill, Fuel Coffee around the city, share a little bit of this recipe for High Five Pie's sweet potato pie. And I hope you both have excellent eating and, you know, get through with that whole bird thing and then just get right to what matters, which is pie.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is Weekday.
And now, the sound of the day.
Our sound today comes from our bicycle correspondent, Willie Weir, in Zagain, Myanmar, in Burma. He was walking back to his hotel, the Happy Hotel, that's what it's called, and the entrance was blocked by a dancing elephant. Two people in a large elephant costume, dancing to the music of a band on a float truck. They were celebrating the full moon festival.
Can't you see him in that elephant costume? The music was blasted through speakers at so high a decibel level. Willie says we would have been fined if we had played it at its original level. So what sounds are you hearing? What are the interesting sounds of your day, whether you're in Myanmar or in your own backyard? Share them with us on this holiday season, especially, or other times. We want to hear your sound of the day. Record 30 seconds of it and send it to us weekday at KUOW.org. Put sound of the day in the subject line. And stick around. Vaughn Palmer, Robert Horton, and Todd Bishop all coming up.
Good morning. It's a minute before 10. I'm Andy Hurst. I have some breaking news to tell you about. Israel and Hamas have agreed to a ceasefire. We'll get the details during the news coming up.
Support for KUOW comes from TIAA CREF, helping people pursue their financial goals. Learn more at tiaacref.org/WA.
Hostile takeovers are so old.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.